This episode is presented by Curator. Curator is an all-encompassing, curated lifestyle membership for the modern woman. With style expert Rachel Zoe at the helm, Curator delivers member value via the curated lens of confidence, convenience, and community. Curator delivers coveted name brand fashion, beauty, and home essentials right to your door every season. Each seasonal box of style includes 5 pieces to elevate your style. The new winter curation features products from trailblazing female founders and designers to help you feel a bit more chic and confident this holiday season. Become a member now to get the winter curation, unlock year-round access to members-only shop, and receive exclusive member benefits. Rachel Zoe's Curator is exclusively offering our listeners $30 off by using the code PODGO at curator.com. That's code PODGO30. For $30 off at Curator, curateur.com. More than just a box, your trusted partner in living a life well curated.
Oh.
Okay, now I'm recording.
Now we're live.
Now we are. Now we can talk.
Okay.
No new Patreons, no new really anything. Ooh, I did. Because you know all that like 2020 Spotify recap, blah, 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 is all going on right now?
No.
Where'd it go?
What are you talking about?
Everyone's getting the like 2020 roundup from Spotify. Like your most listened stuff, your most listened this, or like how much time you spent on a podcast and all that fun stuff. Like see how you listened and, oh, where's that?
I can't see.
See how you listened in 2020? Can you see?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, we got one for our podcast, and it said that we have reached 12 countries and in 24 episodes, because that's all I think we've released this year, which doesn't seem like a lot, but then I guess we didn't start until like May, so it's like halfway through the year.
Yeah.
That we shared like over 1,200 minutes of content on Spotify for that, because it only does Spotify, but it doesn't say like listeners or anything like that. It just said that we hit 12 countries. I was like, no, I'm not.
That's pretty badass.
Right. Like 12 countries, I'll take it. You know, it's weird. I was trying to figure out, I was like, when did we start this? And I went back and looked, and like, I first uploaded our first 3 episodes sometime in May.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So it's been like now about 6
COVID was like March. We were like, what are we going to do?
I know. We did not know what we were going to do with our lives. Now we have too much going on with our lives.
Yeah. COVID didn't impact our jobs like we hoped.
Mm-mm. Not even a little bit. Not at all. So anything new with you that we need to share with our listeners?
Oh. I've told you this. I haven't seen you in forever, like a whole 2 weeks.
I know.
I'm going to Nevada in January.
Okay.
To see Buck's family and whatnot. I wanted to drive, but that's not happening. We're going to fly, which I like flying too, so it's fine. I wanted to see like the snow, and probably wouldn't happen anyways because that's my luck. Probably won't snow while I'm there until the day I leave.
Probably.
Because we went like, I guess it's been like 3 years ago. Because 2 years ago, we were in New York. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, yeah, 2018. Ooh. No, was it 18?
Yeah, because last year, Buck's mom was here. We did, like, Brinley's birthday here at the house. So, we haven't been to Nevada. And it snowed the day after we got home. I was pissed.
That's dumb. I know, I told Tim I wanted to do something. He said, what do you want to do for, what do you want for Christmas? I was like,
are you fucking kidding me? It fell again all by itself.
Well, then you can't get in trouble. Here, show our listeners what you broke.
Guys, I have these deer skulls on the wall, and this one fell, and its little snoot is missing. It doesn't have a snoot. Its snoot is right here in pieces. It's broken.
If you were a Patreon member, you could be watching what we're seeing right now.
And this time it fell by itself on me. I didn't touch anything.
Hey, it's on video. So if he doesn't believe you, be like, babe, sign up for our Patreon level.
All right. Well, now that my deer head is fucking broken.
Welcome to One More Crime Podcast. Paranormal edition. Amanda is falling off her walls.
Apparently so.
So, going on an airplane.
Yeah.
Going hiking.
That'll be fun.
Hopefully. We'll see. Hopefully it snows. I just don't want snow. Going somewhere in December. We haven't decided. So we were going to do Broken Bow.
And don't mind Erin's background noise of her child in the bathtub right now, because that's what that is. I can't edit it out.
Mommy!
Erin didn't think this one through, clearly.
No. I'm not recording tonight. It's all you. So this is mom.
But that's still in our background noise.
This is the mom night.
Oh, and God. I wasn't prepared for that. I would have done it by myself.
Where's your margarita?
All right, guys, pause. My dogs are going outside.
Okay. Your dogs, my kid. Come on now.
It's too much stress. Deer's flying off the wall. Dogs running around the house. Can't do it.
And we're back.
Welcome. All right, so I think my story is actually going to be kind of long, so we might want to, like, get to it.
So, who are you covering? I have one for next week. I'm excited. Well, yeah. I don't know how I'm excited, but.
Well.
Unless you're covering it today, which would be kind of cool, but probably not.
I can't really tell you who I'm covering it because, I mean, I really actually wasn't sure how to do this story to begin with because we're focusing on the female killers, but this one's, it's kind of unique. And I chose this one because with all the stalker shit that's been going on, it hit just a little bit too close to home, meaning that the victim very well could have been me or at the very least one of my loved ones. So I decided that the best way to do this is to kind of start backwards. Like, I'm going to start with the victim first, and then we'll talk about the killer, and then it'll all kind of tie in.
Okay.
So.
All right.
And it's pretty long. 3,000 words.
Oh, that's too many.
Sherry Rasmussen reminds
me. That's what I wanted to do. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow. Copycat. First of all, that reminds me of Rasputin from Anastasia.
I thought that sounded familiar, but I was like, who knows? Yeah. Probably a podcast.
So Sherry Rasmussen.
We grew up with that.
She grew up in Van Nuys, California. So she was very smart and athletic. By 16, she was 6 feet tall. She was very close with her family and she was well liked. She graduated high school at the age of 16. She started college that same year and she graduated college at the age of 20. She actually got her degree in nursing. So by her mid-20s, she was already the director of nursing at Glendale Adventist Medical Center. And she bought a condo in LA in a gated community against her parents' wishes, but they supported her and knew that by telling her no, that she wouldn't listen. So they helped her buy the condo. In 1984, Sherry went to a party and she met a man, and she came back from that party and told her friends and family all about this man who just had her so smitten. And this man was John Rutten. Rutten. I heard it pronounced different ways.
Rutten. I feel Rutten. Like that's how we would say it.
He was ambitious. He was also tall at 6'4", which was important to Sherry since she was also so tall for a woman. They had so much in common, running, tennis, etc. They liked the same taste in movies and music and blah, blah, blah. Friends said that she seemed very happy with John and that they were such a great, good-looking couple. They moved really fast, in my opinion. They got engaged. So they met in 1984. They got engaged and married in 1985. They were wasting no time. They lived in Sherry's condo together, and everything seemed to be going well for these newlyweds. But, you know, since we're covering this on our crime podcast, we know it doesn't stay that way for too long. February 24th, 1986, just 3 months after Sherry and John got married, John comes home from work one day and instantly realizes that something is wrong when he sees the garage door wide open. He walks into their condo and he finds Sherry laying flat on her back in a pool of blood in the middle of the living room. She was still wearing the robe that she was wearing when he left for work that morning. John calls 911 and officers get there within minutes. The lead detective was a senior homicide detective named Lyle Mayer. And I'm going to be honest, I am not a fan of this dude because he's just, I think he's just dumb. I don't know. But he spoke with John first and, of course, starts asking who would want to harm Sherry, blah, blah, blah. He explicitly asks, in quotes, she's not having any problems with an ex-boyfriend or you with an ex-girlfriend. And John says, no. There is a Snapped episode and there's also a coverage on Dateline NBC. Most of what I'm getting, like most of my source is from Dateline NBC, a little bit from the Snapped episode and then just a little bit here and there, but most is from Dateline. But in the Snapped episode that covered this case, they said that John did tell the officers about his ex-girlfriend that they needed to look into, but because it had been so long since their breakup, they didn't think that she was a likely suspect. But on Dateline NBC, which is that quote that I just gave, they literally play the interview and John does not mention his ex-girlfriend to the officers at all.
I just Googled it, so I already know who we're talking about.
So yeah, because they asked. So like, and I listened to it and the officer said, has she had any problems at work? And he's like, no, you know, her work is hard. And he was like, no, like problems at work. And he was like, well, no, it's just she has a stressful job. And he said, so she's not having any problems with an ex-boyfriend or you with an ex-girlfriend? And he says, no, point blank. So before we go any further, I'm going to describe the crime scene just so you can kind of have it in your mind what happened. And then we're going to move on to the theories and the rest of the investigation and why I think Officer Detective Stupid Lyle Mayor whatever is dumb. So you need to know the layout of the condo. I didn't know anything about condos in LA, but they are apparently tall and narrow. So this condo, their condo had three floors. The first floor is the living room. That's where like the whole living kind of chill area was. The second floor was the dining room and kitchen area. And the third floor was the bedrooms.
That's weird.
So the duet.
So that's weird.
Yeah, I thought so too. But the original theory is that the struggle had started on the second floor in that dining kitchen area. There were two shots fired on that floor. Both shots were fired like through the curtain in the sliding window. And it was assumed that these shots were fired during the struggle. And then Sherry tried to run from her attacker. Her attacker got to her and dragged her back down to the living room. And at that point, it seemed like the attacker basically used any and everything that they could find to beat Sherry. There was a shattered porcelain vase found right next to Sherry's head that they believe that she was hit with. Her eye and the whole right side of her face was completely swollen and black. And they think that she was pistol whipped a minimum of two times. And when Sherry was finally down, they think that the porcelain vase that they hit her in the head with, they think that that was like her final, like to get her down. Her attacker shot her three times at point blank range. And I heard this on the Snapped episode, not anywhere else, that they found a blanket right next to Sherry that had gunpowder and bullet holes through it that they think was used to muffle the sound of that gun.
Probably.
They also found a small thin rope by the door, as well as Sherry's bloody handprint low on the wall in the entryway. There was also two fingernails found near the front door, and Sherry had a bite mark on her left inner forearm. A drawer was pulled out from the end table and everything was pretty much just dumped all over the floor. And Sherry's car and purse were missing from the home. So Detective Dunn Mayer was convinced from the get-go that this was a botched burglary. Due to the mess, the missing car and the purse, and the stack of stereo equipment that was left by the front door, Detective Mayer even told John this on day one of the investigation. His quote was, he said, so I'm a pretty good judge of character and I don't think you had anything to do with this. And what I think happened is that your house was burglarized between this time and this time on night one of the investigation.
That's good. Yeah. Glad he was just a psychic and knew that.
Right. So his theory was that two male burglars came in through the front door attempting to take the stereo equipment and some other things, but they knocked down a shelf and a speaker fell and that noise alerted Sherry to come downstairs where the struggle began. He claims that one man fled the scene, taking the car that the burglars came in, and the other man stayed behind, fighting with Sherry, kills her, and then takes her own car because obviously his partner ditched him and he needed a ride.
And he knew this was a man because...
No, two men.
Two men because...
because that's the only thing that could possibly make sense.
Oh, okay.
Right. So pretty much no one else believed this. Like, her family was like, no, it just doesn't sit right with me. Like, not at all. But then a few weeks after Sherry's murder, like, I mean, three-ish weeks, another burglary happened down the street from their condo. This time, a woman came home and interrupted the men. There were two this time. One fled the scene, another stayed and pointed a gun at the woman's head. The woman survived. And this really just convinced the police even more that they were on the right track and it was a burglar and that was all they wanted to do. Or all they wanted to focus on. So Sherry's family did not buy this theory. It just didn't make sense. Nothing of value was actually missing. She had a whole jewelry box upstairs that was not touched at all. The stereo equipment that they talked about was like, it was just set in front of like the entryway stairs, but it wasn't taken. Like, it was just set there. Like, I don't know. And her missing car was, do what?
Like, it was staged?
Almost. Yeah. It's like they got the stereo and then moved. Yeah. Like, it was staged. Like, they got the stereo and moved it and then just left it there.
Hmm.
So nothing was actually really missing except for the car and her purse. But the missing car was found within 2 weeks. They didn't take it to a chop shop. It was literally just found on the side of the street, like with the keys still in the ignition. And then Sherry's purse was actually found that same day that she was found murdered and brought back to her house. Like, someone found it and then gave it to her neighbor to bring back home. Her family gave the police other leads to look into, one of which was a coworker of Sherry's that was overlooked for a promotion. And that coworker started harassing Sherry, like, you know, basically just bothering her. And I think even like messed with her car, vandalized her car at work, like to the point where Sherry had to make a report to the hospital security. And like, they walked her to her car several times.
Oh, that's great. But couldn't have possibly been that person.
No. And Sherry's family mentioned another female that they should look into, John's ex-girlfriend. Sherry had told her dad that this ex-girlfriend of John's would just show up sometimes out of nowhere uninvited, and that they didn't know that the ex's name. Just that they should probably talk to John and figure out who it is, like that there's someone there. And the cops didn't really seem interested and never looked into either of those leads. If you yawn one more time, I'm going to knock you out.
That's right. I've held in like three.
Jesus. Anyways. So they actually...
Now that I've been threatened.
Yeah. Get it together. They actually told Sherry's dad that he watched too much television and completely dismissed him.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So they kept searching for these supposed homicidal burglars, but never found them. So naturally, the case went cold. In 1991, Detective Mayer retired, thank God. And Sherry's case was then passed down to new detectives in homicide. The family met with these new detectives, and those detectives were basically still running on the same theory of a burglary and had nothing new to tell them. Sherry's dad, his name was Nels, was tired of it and basically took his daughter's case into his own hands, started kind of investigating and looking into things. So in 1993, Sherry's dad read about DNA and how it had advanced and all the things that they could potentially do with it at that point. Because, you know, in 1986, they didn't have that. So he even offered the police department to, he said that he would pay for the DNA testing of his daughter's swab that they took from her bite mark. And the department straight up said, nope, we don't do that.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Like, we're not going to let you pay for it. No, thank you. No donations, no nothing. And that was it.
So then they knew their story was bullshit.
Yeah. So in 2001, there was a new unit being created to use these new technologies to analyze bullets, fingerprints, and DNA. Essentially, it was like a cold case unit, but they called it something different there. Sherry's case was looked into again. And they were looking for the swab that was taken from the bite mark on Sherry's arm. Detective Shepard was the one in charge of it now, and he went searching for the swab, but he could not find it. And he straight up said it was due to incompetence 100% and that it actually happened a lot, which is so sad.
Yeah.
Jennifer Francis is a criminalist in the lab, and she actually Detective Shepard had wrote a note to himself to put in the lab, like, hey, find this swab so that he didn't forget. And she saw that and was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to freaking help him find the swab. So she did. She found it in the coroner's freezer. The envelope it was in was torn, but the tube and everything was still intact. So she tested it. But because cold cases don't take priority, it wasn't until a year after that she actually got back in touch with Detective Shepard with the results from the DNA test. And the swab came back with an unknown female's sample. So that rules out their whole two men burglary, at least one of them
right.
was a woman. So she was bitten by a woman now. And Detective Shepard still kind of went with the burglary, but he was looking into like a man-woman team. But when Detective Shepard was about to start his investigation, he was taken off the case because a current serial killer was running rampant through Los Angeles that year. And he never actually got to look into it and go any further into the case.
So who was that serial killer?
I don't know. It was in like 2003. Whoever the serial killer was in 2003 in LA.
Huh. We'll have to look it up.
Google it.
Okay, I will.
So now, and that was kind of it. In 2009, LAPD homicide detective Jim Nuttall got a hold of Perry's case, and the case was actually sent to him to be archived. Basically, that means that the case was sent to this department to be put on a dark shelf and probably never to be looked at again. But before they could be archived, a detective had to go through the case one last time to make sure there was nothing else to do. And that's where Detective Nuttall comes in. Did you find out who it was?
I'm working on it.
Oh.
You did say 23.
Like 2003, yeah.
Carol M. Bundy?
I don't know. We'll figure it out. Or if any of our listeners know, in 2003, who was the serial killer running rampant in Los Angeles?
Yeah. Anybody from California?
Because they ruined Detective Shepard's, you know, momentum on Sherry's case. First, Detective Nuttall thought that it was just a burglary gone horribly wrong, but then a specific detail caught his attention. Remember that stack of stereo equipment that I mentioned that was just kind of placed by the entryway and left there?
Stage stuff?
Well, it had Sherry's blood on it. And the blood on it was noted, but it was not really photographed well. So to him, that meant that the equipment was most likely moved after Sherry was attacked, because why else would her blood be on that thing?
Mm-hmm.
His thought process for that was that if they wanted the stereo, they would have just taken it at that point because there was nothing stopping them. Like, she was already dead, blah, blah, blah. So now he thinks that murder was the motive and not a burglary. And to add to the incompetence of the original crime scene collectors, I don't think that's what they're called, but that's what we're going with. Inside that blood smear on the stereo was a fingerprint. That fingerprint was never documented. It. They never lifted it. They didn't even book the stereo into evidence. It was just gone. And the rope that was found by the front door, they believe that was actually brought with the killer, which definitely is not indicative of a burglar, because why would you need to tie someone up if you just plan to rob the house?
Right.
Like,
unless you're really prepared and you're like, somebody might be there. You might need to tie up.
Let's but typically that's like a whole different motive. Like, most burglars don't even go into places if they think someone
with people. Called. Yeah.
Right. So
that's extra work.
Yeah.
Thanks. Finally, smarter, not harder.
Finally, Detective Nuttall went back to the female profile from the bite mark. He made a list of all the women in Sherry's life that could be potential suspects. He came up with a list of 5 women. Sherry's mom, Sherry's sister Teresa, and an old roommate and a friend, Jane. All 3 of those women gave DNA samples and they were cleared pretty quickly. Woman number 4 is the coworker that I mentioned that started to harass Sherry. She looked like a really good suspect because workplace jealousy, harassment, all checks out. They ended up doing like a dumpster dive at this woman's house and her DNA did not match. So now woman number 5, John Rutten's ex-girlfriend. Now, I should mention that his ex-girlfriend was not mentioned in the case files that Detective Nuttall had at all. He didn't even know that this woman was a thought or anything until he contacted Sherry's dad.
But didn't like her mom and them say to look into her?
And the original police officers, you know, Detective Dumb Mayor, did not put it in their police report at all.
Oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm.
Because they just assumed that they were being crazy and they watched too much TV.
Oh, yeah. You said that. Okay.
Then Detective Nuttall.
That's like what helps me listening to these podcasts makes me paranoid. I'm like, no, it makes me educated.
Right. Educated and on the lookout for everything. So at that point, Detective Nuttall got in touch with John because he wanted him to kind of fill in the blanks. And John confirmed the woman's existence. He said that her name was Stephanie Lazarus and that they were off and on for a couple years until he married Sherry. Now, I'm sure you're trying to figure out how this case has resonated with me and why I said it hit close to home. And it's because Stephanie Lazarus was an LAPD police officer.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
And if anyone knows, my ex was also a police officer, and I'm pretty sure that's how he got to do some of the things that he did, was from his little friends still in the
PD. Why does he even have friends? I'm really shocked.
I don't know. So when I saw this case, I was like, oh, what if he killed me? What if he tried to kill Tim? Mm-mm. So definitely hit a little close to home.
Well, I may know who the murderer was in 2003. There was a The Grim Sleeper and Carol M. Bundy. Those were going on in L.A. in 2003.
Who was Stephanie Lazarus? She was an athletic, determined woman. People said that she was not one to take no for an answer. She went to... a little bit. She has crazy
eyes. I haven't Googled her yet. Go for it while you're listening.
She has crazy eyes in most of her pictures.
Oh, yeah.
She went to UCLA, and that is where she met John Rutten. And they were dorm mates, and then they became friends. They kind of dated off and on, but it really seemed more like a friends with benefits type situation than an actual relationship. According to friends and fellow classmates at UCLA, it was well known that Stephanie was way more into John and wanted way more than he did. He said he made it clear that whatever they had going on was very casual.
Yeah, no, he didn't do that.
He swears so many times that he did, and that, you know, that's why it was so off and on. I don't know. So after graduation at UCLA, Stephanie decided to join the LAPD. Apparently that back then they had like a court order to start. They had to hire more female police officers. Like there was women in the 80s in the police, but they were police women and not like police officers. And like they didn't go to the academy, so that they were held to like a lower standard because they were women and women can't do shit men do.
Wow.
It was like some court order that they had to start hiring more women. So she decided to be one of those. She graduated the academy, and I believe she joined the force officially in 1983. So she continued to see John off and on. He apparently introduced her to his family and even took her to formal work events. To me, that just doesn't sound casual.
Yeah, no.
But maybe if he told her it meant nothing and she still just went with it to just have the time with him, then I guess that part's on her. I mean, dudes do that. Dudes are like, no, it's just casual. But then girls are like, okay, but he's letting me spend time with him. So like, it must mean something. It doesn't.
No, they just don't want to be alone until they find the right one. Then
exactly.
Like,
which is what happens. So Stephanie ended up rising through the ranks in the LAPD. She became a detective and she served in the DARE program, DARE against drugs. You remember we had that in school?
Yeah, I don't even know what it stands for.
I don't either. Drugs are really evil.
Bingo. That's it.
Nailed it. And then she was in internal affairs for a short time where, ironically enough, she actually, you know, looked into other officers who were like charged with wrongdoings or something like that. And then she landed back as a detective specializing in art theft and fraud. She even married a fellow police officer and together they adopted a little girl. And by all accounts, she was a really good mom.
So why did she turn psycho?
Well, that brings us back to Detective Nuttall and his list of women. So Stephanie Lazarus was woman number 5 and the only one left on the list of suspects. Since she was a fellow officer, they had to do their investigation on the DL, and her husband worked in the same building that Detective Nuttall was in. So they never gave her name ever. They simply referred to her as number five. But now, obviously, since it's done and over with, we can say her name. Sherry had told her father about John's ex-girlfriend, Stephanie, who would just appear. She said that she even came into their home unannounced and uninvited. And like straight up one night, she was telling her dad that Sherry was sitting at the dining room table and like she looked up and Stephanie was just like in her dining room.
Well, she's married and has a child.
No, I don't know if she's married yet. I don't think she got married until like the early 90s.
Still weird.
Yeah, that ex would also come to Sherry's work and told her that if that marriage doesn't work, that she would be there to pick up the pieces for John whenever Sherry was out of the picture. Oh, so, yeah, Detective Nuttall visited with John again, directly asking about Stephanie. John was very clear. If you listen on Dateline NBC, they have a podcast and it's the episode titled Detective Story. That's where I got most of this from. He was very clear in that interview. He was like, I want to make our relationship clear. We were never like a boyfriend, girlfriend thing. John stated that after his engagement to Sherry, Stephanie had called him one night devastated, asking him to come over to talk. And he did because he's a fucking dumbass.
Yeah, they probably had sex too.
That night, Stephanie expressed her love for him and begged him to be with her. John said no, he was happy with Sherry and was in love with her and was moving forward with their relationship. Stephanie was upset and John, just being the good man that he was trying to comfort her, but he comforted her so well, they ended up having sex.
His dick just fell right in.
It just slid right in. I was trying to comfort her, babe, and there it was, just whoop.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. What a douchebag. So not long after that, Sherry had came home. Too. Do what?
So he should go to jail.
Yeah. Not long after. He was already engaged to Sherry too. I don't understand that. I love her and I'm so happy with her, but I'm going to fuck you to make you feel better. What? Like you put your dick in somewhere to move on? Like I don't.
Yes. You don't put your dick places like that?
No.
Didn't know you had one. Okay. We obviously wouldn't know how to use it correctly if we had one.
Obviously not. Because mine wouldn't be falling into desperate people's hoo-haws.
Yeah.
So not long after that whole incident, Sherry came home really upset, saying like to John, saying that Stephanie had confronted her at work, like showed up to her job again, telling her that John was still into her and that they had actually slept together. So John owned it and admitted it straight up and was like, no, I'm sorry. I love you. And it meant nothing and blah, blah, blah. And please forgive me. And, you know, blah, 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 all the bullshit excuses that men give. And they worked through it because, you know, obviously Sherry still married him. John also tells Detective Nuttall that he told the original detectives to look into Stephanie. But like I said earlier, that was no
obviously.
Nowhere. No. And I heard the interview myself and he said, no. A few years after Sherry's death, John apparently reaches out to Stephanie and they meet up and they go on to a vacation together to Hawaii as friends.
What?
He does not think, like when Detective Nuttall asked if he thinks that Stephanie had anything to do with it, he said, no, he was like, if I like every dime, like in the world, like, I don't think she would do anything. Like straight up willing to bet money that this crazy ex-girlfriend would not kill his wife. So still in 2009, they're trying to prove that Stephanie either is or is not their suspect. Cause that's the last woman on the list. So they follow her to a Costco where she gets a soda and she throws that soda away outside. And then it's public property. The team took that soda cup and analyzed the DNA. And within 48 hours, it came back as a match to the bite mark on Sherry's arm.
Shocker.
Yeah.
Would have suspected that.
Right. Well, so they had to be like super sneaky about it because they didn't want her to catch on to it or like, yeah, they didn't want her to catch on and they didn't want her to like be prepared. They wanted to catch her off guard. So on June 5th, 2009, detectives went to Stephanie asking for help with a suspect who was talking about art theft. They basically were like, hey, we need your help. We have this dude in custody and he's mentioning like art theft or art fraud. And that's just not in our area of expertise. Would you be willing to come with us and like talk to him? She was like, hell yeah, why not? So they brought her down to the jail because when you get down there, all of your weapons had to be checked before entering and they didn't want her to be armed. So they get down there, everyone checks their weapons, they get into the room, and she doesn't know that the dude in there is obviously not like an art suspect. And she also didn't know that she was being recorded. They ended up telling Stephanie that her name came up from someone in her past. And she was like, oh, okay, cool. And then they said, do you know John Rutten? And she keeps repeating it, John Rutten, John Rutten. And then she says, oh, John Rutten. Well, yeah, I went to school with him.
How'd you forget?
She admits to dating him and starts to get confused. She's like, what's this about? And they were like, well, it's about his wife. So she starts to get like, I guess, uncomfortable and almost agitated. And she's like, I don't understand why you're asking me about a guy that I dated a million years ago. And then they asked if they knew what happened to his wife. And she said, yeah, I know she got killed. So when asked if they knew the wife's name, she goes, Shelly, Sherry, I don't know. And at first she was just acting like she wasn't sure if she ever met or knew Sherry. She kept saying in her words, I may have talked to her. And I think she worked at a hospital somewhere. And yeah, I may have threatened her. Yeah. She's like, I may have met her at a hospital. When asked why she would even need to talk to Sherry, she said, you know what? I think I went to her. I went to her and I said, you know, like, is he dating you? Because he's bothering me. So I think that we might've had a conversation about that one or two, but maybe it could have been three times.
Wow.
When asked if she had ever been to their condo, she said, I don't think I've ever gone there, but I don't want to say no. And then you say, oh, well, you were there at a party. So it's like, she kept trying to cover her tracks and like talk her way out of it. And then when asked if she ever fought with Sherry, she said, well, no, I don't think so. It doesn't sound familiar. And then she says some other stuff. And then, cause the text was like, well, wouldn't you remember if you like fought with someone? I don't remember
anything in your life, but like, you're a cop. You?
And she goes, so what? Now you're saying I fought with her. So I must've killed her. This is ridiculous. So basically,
like, hey, you said it, not us.
Right. So basically a lot of maybes and I don't think those are maybe are out of, I don't know. She finally says, now I'm thinking I'm probably going to need to talk to a lawyer. She gets up and she walks out of the room, but there was a team of detectives waiting for her outside, and that's where she was placed under arrest. She was read her rights and placed into the LA County Jail. Her arrest led to the question of police corruption or just straight up incompetence. Since Detective Mayer was so gung-ho on the burglar theory from like hour one, my guess is just going to be incompetence because... Yeah. He also stated, so he wouldn't talk to them on Dateline NBC when they requested to talk, but he had previously stated that Sherry's family never asked him to look into John's ex-girlfriend, which I find that hard to believe.
They just made that up.
Well, I think he was just so dead set on, nope, it was about robbery or whatever, like that he didn't want to hear it. The trial for Stephanie Lazarus began on February 6th of 2012, which was over 25 years after the murder of Sherry. The prosecution did have a pretty solid case, though. The day of that murder, Stephanie was off of work and she had no alibi. Her DNA was in the bite mark on Sherry's arm. The bullets found at the scene were the type that was used by LAPD officers at that time. And Stephanie reported her off-duty weapon stolen just 1 week after the murder. Sounds very fishy.
Yeah.
As far as the motive, it was that Stephanie was just still in love with John. And when they searched Stephanie's home, they found a 600-page journal. In this journal, she wrote about John and how upset she was about his engagement. And just, they could tell by that journal that she was
How did her husband feel about that?
I don't even know. Because then they also found a photo of a sleeping John. And on the back was written, I snuck in at 1 a.m. and took the picture. And that she held on to that for 30 years because it was apparently from college.
Fucking freako.
So my only problem with that is that even after Sherry was out of the picture, Stephanie never went after John again. Like the only time to, like even John's admission, the only time was that when John contacted her years later. It seemed that she moved on. She got married. She had a kid. And the prosecution, I guess, thought that too, but because they also checked like her search histories and stuff. And she was checking up on him for like 10, 15 years later, doing internet searches, making sure, like seeing what he was up to. But it just doesn't make sense. Like, why kill the wife to not go after the man that you want?
I don't know. That's weird.
It doesn't make sense. So the jury found Stephanie Lazarus guilty of first-degree murder on May 11th, 2012. She was sentenced to 27 years to life in prison. Of course, she tried to appeal the case, but that guilty verdict was upheld. And here is a shitty fun fact. Because of how long she served the LAPD, she still receives her pension even though she's in prison. This bitch gets just under $72,000 a year while she's incarcerated.
Bullshit. I don't even make that much working.
For murdering
someone. That's like how much fuck makes.
Still getting money. Why not take that pension and put it to like the debt relief fund that America needs, or put it towards the stimulus that people need right now because of this fucking virus? Put it towards a cure for the virus. Like, why? One. What does she need $72,000 a year in prison for? What does she need it for? Nothing.
That should go to the entire prison to pay for all their food and shit they got to do in jail.
Right. Not
her personally.
But she really is like batshit crazy because she also sent a letter to John's mom like the year, it was like 85, like when they got married, when John and Sherry did. She wrote a letter to his mother saying that the past year has really torn me up, and I don't think I'll ever understand John's decision. And I hope I can find someone in my life that I can love as much as I love John.
Nut job.
She's just crazy. And then her defense.
Did his mom even know her?
Oh yeah. Her defense tried so hard to say that she couldn't have done this because she was devoted to the job and that she was a victim of shoddy police work. They also tried to say that the bullets shouldn't be used against her because those weren't exclusive to LAPD or law enforcement. And also that there were hundreds of others police officers with the same gun and bullets. They tried to say that the sample wasn't even in good condition and that someone could have planted it in the freezer. They said that the police department was just trying to close the case, so they needed like a fall guy, and they just decided to blame it on her because she knew the dude. They also said that because she worked in internal affairs, that it could have been payback because her mom was like, well, maybe she pissed someone off in that department. Okay.
He was a crazy stalker.
They told them that you can't prove those theories because it never happened. They even said that the seal on the test tube was intact and that they had evidence logs like the chain of custody. And that swab contained the second DNA profile, which was Sherry's, that could only have been collected from the scene, like when they took the swab on her arm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's just a whole piece of shit.
A whole piece of shit.
A whole piece.
Not a turd. A whole shit.
Yeah, and then that's just scary. Like, it goes to the whole, like, cops covering cops shit. And then it just, and if it's not a cover-up, then it's just straight-up incompetence. For 30 fucking years, you wanted to say, oh, it's a burglary. We're not going to look into anything else.
Like, that's pretty shitty.
What? Just because they were like, oh, well, y'all broke up like almost 2 years ago, so I doubt she's a suspect.
Probably not her.
Me and my ex broke up over a year ago, and here the fuck he still is creeping on everything.
That's true.
So people clearly, and he's a former police officer, so like,
couldn't be him. It's gotta be somebody else.
Right. Like when I saw this case, I was like, oh, that's nice. That's the one.
I'm very familiar.
Right. Well, I don't have anything else. That was my lovely story, and no updates on the stalker thus far.
That's good, though.
That is good. It's been nice.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been paying enough attention to my social media, so who knows. Tim hasn't accepted any odd friend requests lately.
Not that I know of.
That's good.
No one's like requested me.
Yeah, he's gonna have to take like 6 months off before you try again.
Of course. Ugh. Hopefully by then he'll find someone else to manipulate and fuck over.
Who knows? Why isn't he stalking his most recent girlfriend?
I don't know.
Like, they broke up and he went right back to,
because he said she was a narcissist. I'm sure he says that about me too.
Probably.
Mm. I'm all right with that.
I have a good episode for next week.
Yay. So we'll hear from Erin next week. Are we just going to start alternating, me and you? Does that work?
Sure.
Works for me. Because yeah. I think that lets us do like longer episodes, like more details if we need it.
Yeah.
So we're going to start doing that. Like, we'll alternate episodes. I'll do one. Erin will do one.
Surprise.
Surprise. We just figured this out ourselves. Yay.
You're right on the new details.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to us. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to us. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at One More Crime Podcast. If you have a story suggestion, please send us an email at onemorecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back next Wednesday with one more crime. See what I did there? Have a good week.